alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Hiba Ghalib welcoming you to RadioIslam.com's special program on Palestine, an American journalist's search for truth. Allison Weir took time from her busy schedule as a freelance journalist and photographer to share with us some of her experiences dealing with American media's reporting of the current intifada in Palestine. She also talks to us about her recent trip to the Holy Land, where she discovers the shocking truth of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Without further delay, we at RadioIslam.com are happy to introduce to you Allison Weir.
If you can please just tell me a little bit about yourself, you know, nationality-wise, your educational
sure.
background, anything you want to share.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just very much a mainstream American,
mm-hmm.
born and brought up in this country. As a Christian, as a child, I was a Presbyterian, and I've been a journalist off and on for many years. I was connected with the founding of the Center for Investigative Reporting many years ago in San Francisco. And I was a freelance reporter and editor for some magazines, a photographer. Most recently, I was the editor of the newspaper in Sausalito, California, called the Marin Scope newspaper. I have three children. I'm trying to think what else I should tell you about myself. I have no direct connection to the Middle East. I don't have any family members there or any connection beyond that connection that all Americans have, but most of us don't know about, in that it's our tax money that's going over there and that is funding the violence. But I didn't know any of that up until the beginning of this current uprising at the end of September of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when, for the first time, last October, I started to try to look into this issue for myself, to try to understand this, you know, what I thought was a very confusing issue in the Middle East and I had never really looked into before. But I noticed when I was listening to news reports, as a journalist, it seemed to me that I was really only hearing one side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I really paid attention to it, I noticed that I would hear the Israeli perspective and I'd hear Israeli statements from various spokesmen and that sort of thing. But I would wait to hear what the Palestinian spokespeople had to say, and I didn't usually hear anything from them, which made me very disturbed and made me think that I was only hearing one side of a very important issue. So when I decided to look into it for myself. My youngest son had just started college, so I had more time available. And when I look into things, I usually look into them very thoroughly. It's just the way I am. It's not necessarily practical, but it's what I do. And so I went on the internet to look, to try to find more information about what was really going on every day. And I went to the library and bookstores to get different books about the history of the region. And I was shocked at what I discovered. I was truly shocked and outraged, both at what was going on daily, the violence and the horrible tragedies, and I was shocked at the history of the region, which I'd never understood before, and I was shocked and outraged as a journalist at the coverage and how extremely distorted the coverage of the region had been and still is, and how much of the very important information that we as Americans should be receiving was being left out of the news report. And so the more I discovered that, the more I thought, this is amazing that it seemed that a huge and massive cover-up was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally just decided that I needed to find out if that was really true, and the only way I thought to do that for sure was to go over and see it for myself. So I bought a round-trip ticket to stay in the Palestinian territories for 1 month. And I just went over with no sponsorship by any organization or any guidance or anything like that, just to wander around and see for myself what was going on. And that's what I did.
So you just picked up and left, huh?
I did it as quickly as I could because it was just before Sharon, just before the election.
Oh.
And all of the predictions were that Sharon was going to be elected. And by that time, I'd read about his history in Lebanon.
Right.
And was very concerned at that, and I wanted to be there as soon as possible because I didn't know what was going to happen. So I got there. I was able to, I just made arrangements as quickly as I could and got the cheapest ticket I could find. And I got there about two days after he was elected. I think I was there from February 7th to March 7th.
Okay, so you stayed about a month in Palestine.
Yeah.
Can I ask you what influenced you to become a journalist and about how long you've worked as a journalist? You mentioned it was on and off, but maybe you can expand upon that.
Sure. Well, I decided to become a journalist when I was in college. My orientation is that people need to know what's going on. And journalism, I love the idea that a journalist's job is to go out there and get information and write about it and report it to people, and then people will act on it. So in college, I decided, after having majored in, at one point, political science, and I was thinking of majoring in philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I decided I wanted something more directly related to people's lives and decided to major in journalism. I went to Middlebury College in Vermont and then the University of Michigan, and I was on the daily newspaper in Ann Arbor, the Michigan Daily.
Okay, so that probably got you really involved in journalism.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You took off from there.
So then as I said, I raised three children. So a lot of times I was raising my children. And one of them, by the way, is now in journalism herself.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two are still at the University of California at Berkeley. But in between raising children, I worked in various editorial positions briefly, and I did a lot of freelancing and some photography.
Oh, okay. So you've done photography also.
Yes.
And for what newspapers have you written, if any?
I did some freelancing for the San Francisco Examiner and for the San Jose Mercury News, and for the Pacific Sun. I was the education writer for the Pacific Sun, which is north of San Francisco.
Now, I have a question here that I think you've answered, but maybe you can be more specific. It says, for how long have you been involved in reporting on Middle Eastern affairs, and specifically Palestine? Now, from what I understand, it's ever since the current uprising,
mm-hmm.
but have you had any involvement in any Palestinian or any Middle Eastern affairs prior to that, or any knowledge, on that?
Well, no. I had never written about the Middle East before at all. I'd never really known about it or attempted to understand it before the recent uprising. I had never been there. I had been, when I was just out of college, back in about 1970, I was in the Peace Corps in Afghanistan. That's the closest I've been, and most Americans may think that's close, but it's very distant. It's like, being in Czechoslovakia and saying that's close to England. I think there's a great misperception in this country about this supposedly monolithic Arab-Muslim world, whereas it's just as fragmented and just as diverse culturally as Europe is, perhaps even more so. So I really had no connection to Israel or Palestine in my past. The first time was just when I decided to go over and see it for myself.
Okay, so that was the only time you actually traveled to the Middle East then. It was during that intifada, the current uprising, for about a month?
That's right. Although, actually, when I was 3 years old, my father was in the Air Force. And when I was 3 years old, he was stationed in Saudi Arabia. So my family lived there for 1 year.
Oh, okay. So you've had some exposure in your background.
Yeah, these sort of hazy, dreamlike memories, from when you're so young,
mm-hmm.
that I sort of have.
Okay, so We know a little bit about your experience in the Middle East. Now, how long did you say you said for exactly a month? Where exactly did you go? What cities did you visit?
I went to East Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Beit Jala, the Haitian refugee camp, Ramallah, the various small villages around the Ramallah area.
And did you go on your own or with your family?
I went on my own. I also went down to Gaza and spent a great deal of time there. I was in Gaza City, in Khan Yunus, in Rafah, and traveling in between. I went up to a Bedouin village in the northern part of Gaza.
Okay, now you said since you traveled on your own, was there any fear in knowing that, you know, that your travel wasn't going to be as secure as traveling to any other nation, probably? Were you fearful, you know, prior to and during?
Yeah, I was a little fearful. Partly I was just fearful of getting lost, you know, not ever having been there and not speaking the language. And the fact that I was going there in the middle of a violent uprising was scary.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, the portrayal here in the media of Palestinians and of Muslims in general is that they're very anti-American and very anti-woman. So that was a little scary. You know, I didn't really quite know what I was getting into. And, of course, I found it was just the opposite. I found people were very welcoming to me. And that I was all from the Palestinian population. I was under danger when I came too near the Israeli military sometimes, as everyone is, actually. But in the Palestinian culture itself, I found it very welcoming and gracious. But I had been a little scared ahead of time, and at times I was lost and confused. So that was frightening.
You literally lost?
Well, not too lost, but for too long.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I wouldn't quite know how to get to the next place.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, that sort of thing.
And you mentioned...
One time I kept running out of... I ran out of money when I was in Gaza because I'd just suddenly gone down there because it had been closed off. And the first time I tried to get in, I couldn't get in at all. So I tried to get in again. And once I got in, I didn't want to leave because I was afraid I wouldn't be allowed back in, even as a journalist. And I had left a lot of my things in Bethlehem. So I only had a few things with me, only a few clothes and only some of my money. And I stayed there a long time. So that was sort of the difficulty.
Right. You mentioned, I'm sorry, you know, I'm going to take you back a little bit on something you've said. That you said this, other people also have been afraid of, you know, going to the Israeli side of town. And in my mind, I would think that being an American, you should feel more secure on that side of town, but...
Well, it wasn't that I was afraid of going to the Israeli side of town. The few times I was in Israel, that felt very safe and very simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people were going to coffee houses and drinking cappuccino and shopping, and, you know, it was pretty much felt like San Francisco in many ways.
Okay.
So that didn't feel at all dangerous. Although the portrayal in the media here is of an Israel under siege, but, you know, compared to what I've been experiencing in the West Bank and in Gaza, I felt that I was just back in America. You know, it could have been in Chicago or New York or San Francisco or something. But what I felt is when I was in the Palestinian territories, when I came too close to the Israeli border from the Palestinian side, or the Israeli checkpoint, then I thought I was in danger because there were soldiers with machine guns aimed right at you. And I had seen and read reports of them firing somewhat indiscriminately or sometimes purposely at people. So that's a dangerous position. I want to go back to that area. I'd love to take my college-age children back there to see what's going on and to visit the Palestinian territories. Except that it would be dangerous for them. They could get shot by the Israeli military. It's a very dangerous place for people.
Dangerous for people in general, not necessarily only Palestinians? Or
not just Palestinians. I feel it's dangerous for journalists. There are many reports of journalists being shot, no matter what their nationality is. It's dangerous for international people that are in the Palestinian territories. It's dangerous for the Israeli peace activists who come over and support the Palestinian protests. There are reports of them being beaten. One woman had her arm broken, an Israeli woman. It's a very dangerous situation for anyone who's not... If you're in the Palestinian territory, then you're at risk of being injured by the Israeli military. That's the reality of the situation. It's not that I'm going to go back over there. I think it's important for us to go there, but people should know that they will be at some risk when they do that.
Correct. And you intend to go back?
I do.
Another time.
And there are at least 40 international people that have gone over there that are of all ages. I know that there are, 18-year-olds and there are 60-year-olds that have all gone over to be an observer force. And they're unarmed. They're to be there. Their plan is, and they're doing this, is to be in the Palestinian territories and by their presence to try to prevent Israel from shooting and killing and bombing the Palestinian territories. It's a very courageous action. They're there right now, and we should be reading about them. Many of them are Americans, many are Europeans, some are Israelis. Reading about them in our press, we should be seeing news reports about them and hearing news reports on our radios, and I don't think we are. But people are doing that right now, and I'm going to be going back both to be supporting that and also to do more reporting.
But when do you plan on doing that?
I'm not sure yet because I'm very torn. On the one hand, I want to be there and see and write and report on what's going on. But the reality is, to change the situation, which any decent human being would want to do when you've seen what's going on there, to change it, that change has to come from within this country, from within the United States. So this is where everyone has to be active and has to get the information out to the American public that doesn't know it yet. So right now, my main focus is to try to go around to the American public to give speeches on campuses, at churches, at Rotary clubs, at libraries, to tell people here what's going on, because this is where we can change it, and this is where we will change it once enough of us are active. So it seems so important to be here that I'm not sure when I'm going to go back over there, but I expect that I'll go probably next month, probably in September.
Oh, so pretty soon, actually.
Possibly.
Oh, yeah.
Very possibly. I might not. I already have a lot of engagements for September for giving speeches.
Mm-hmm.
So that might delay it till October. I'm not sure. But on the other hand, I feel very torn. I feel it's urgent that I go there, but I also feel it's urgent that I speak here.
Well,
I'm not sure yet, which I'll do when.
Right, it's hard to plan these kind of things in advance, but you're right, during September and October, this will be, during the time of the first anniversary of the current uprising, which I'm sure a lot of, I know my university is planning an event, or a week-long event, so I'm sure they'll need people
so
like you
for. Those are so important to get this information out to more people.
Now, you mentioned that you'd be lecturing at the ISNA convention. Where else have you lectured?
I've spoken and shown my pictures at Stanford, at Berkeley, on Capitol Hill in the Rayburn House Office Building. I did a Capitol Hill briefing. I spoke at the Center for Policy Analysis on Palestine. I spoke at UC Santa Barbara, at some community colleges in Philadelphia. In Florida, I spoke at a library program. Tomorrow, I'm going to speak at a Rotary Club. So I'm trying to speak everywhere. Anybody that can help set up speaking engagements for me, it would be wonderful. Especially anything where I can reach the mainstream Americans like I was last fall before I knew what was going on. I'd love to speak at churches, as I said, at at League of Women Voters programs, anywhere, just to tell people what I saw as someone who has no reason to be anything other than objective. I don't have any reason to favor one side of this issue or the other. All I have is reason to favor justice and the facts of the issue, and that's what I report on.
Right. Okay, so you're basically sharing your experiences with everybody, and you want to do that as much as you can. That's very good. May you be given the strength and to do this kind of thing.
صامدون رغم سيل الدم صابرون.
What do you feel addresses this situation in the most biased way? You mentioned New York Times as being one of them, something you're dissatisfied with. Do you have any other sources that you are dissatisfied with?
Well, I'm dissatisfied with any newspaper that has not reported fully and frequently about the U.S. aid to Israel. To me, is a biased source, an unreliable source, because that's such a major part of this conflict. That newspapers that have hundreds of articles about Israel and Palestine and yet have no information about our aid to Israel, or if they've only put it in once, that would be not sufficient. And yet many of these I don't think have even put it in once. Whereas to me, as a journalist, you're supposed to give background information, relevant information about the context of your news story, really almost in every news report. So this information should be in many of them, perhaps most of them, perhaps even all of them. And the fact that it's never in them or only in them once shows that the report is leaving out important information. I find the New York Times is inaccurate. You know, I don't feel that I should single out specific newspapers, because I think they're all leaving out way too much of the important information. I can name a few. The New Republic is atrocious. On the other hand, The Nation often does have good information. I think Harper's Magazine sometimes has good information. I have not seen good information in The Atlantic. Maybe I've missed it. But I have seen that the Harper's Index, sometimes will put in information that is important for people to have, so I think that could be a magazine of use.
Okay, can I ask you a personal question in that if I were to try to find out information directly from the Palestinian source and from the Israeli source, I go directly to their, if they have a website like the Haaretz or other sorts of direct sources.
Yeah.
Would you try to do that also in addition to, you know, Western media outlets?
Yes, that's a very good idea. I would go to Israeli sources directly, the Haaretz, for example, also to the human rights website. I'm trying to remember, Beth Salem is one of them. Gush Shalom, I think, is the name of another organization, and I believe they have a website. Those are good sources of information. On the Palestinian side, there's Al-Haq, I think that's A-L-H-A-Q, and information about the legal international law on this subject. That's very good information, source of information. They have news reports. There's the Christian Peacemaker Team, CPT. I believe that's the name of a website of a Christian group that is headquartered, I believe, in Canada. They have people in Hebron. That's a very good source of information. PCHR, Palestinian Center for Human Rights, is another source of information. Going to the Red Crescent Society webpage, the Red Cross, the United Nations, especially Amnesty International is very good. I think there's something, I'm trying to remember the name of Human Rights Watch, Physician for Social Responsibility. I think it's the name. All of these, all just going to almost any human rights website and seeing what information they have on Palestine and Israel is a good source of information.
Okay, you've mentioned in your article that the U.S. media relies on Israeli military for new reports. If you want, I can read you the quote. Here it says, apparently this also explains a lot of the bias in the U.S. press. The reporters in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv get their numbers and facts from military spokesmen. Information from Israeli sources is printed. Information from Palestinian sources isn't. That quote, it's interesting to me because I'm wondering if there's anything that the Palestinians are doing or they can do to have their perspectives included.
Well, I think there are things that they are doing and that they can do more of. I think being very efficient in giving news releases to reporters can help. I think sadly, often these reporters don't put them in or the newspapers don't put them in. The effort needs to be made and increased to get information to news reporters. I think people here in this country that, you know, read newspapers and feel they're not getting complete information, it's essential that all of us write letters to the editor every day if we can, certainly every week. Whenever we think that information is being left out, we should write letters to the editor. Those will sometimes be printed. The more we write, the more the likelihood is that some will be printed, so we should make that effort. Calling the editors directly when we think that they've left out information or they've reported information that's inaccurate or distorted. You know, just sitting and complaining or talking to one another or feeling angry isn't doing anything. But actively taking actions that will make a difference, we all need to do.
Okay.
I think the fact that you and other people are going into journalism is very important. And again, I believe strongly in journalism. I don't believe that we should go in as partisans. We should go in as partisans of human rights and of accurate information. That's what journalists are supposed to do. And in this, it's not that I'm looking for the, quote, Palestinian side as opposed to the, quote, Israeli side. I'm looking for accuracy and fullness of information.
Okay, thank you very much. Now you mentioned some things that we could do. Do you think that this will actually make a difference?
I think it will. I think that the change is coming. I think that once the American public learns what I've learned, they will be outraged and will change our policies in the Middle East. So I think that even though I know it's discouraging because this has lasted for so long, but we have to remember that things change. In some ways, this country is the most changeable country on earth. And that with effort, the change that I feel is inevitable will come sooner. You know, we can't wait for it to happen because too many more lives on both sides will continue to be lost. But the change is coming. The cracks in the cover-up have already started to occur. The segregation in the South, the institutionalized segregation, segregated schools that used to exist there, was changed and no longer exists. The apartheid of South Africa, when I was young, it looked like that would never change. That has been changed. So I think this change will occur too. We just need to all get out there and make it happen sooner.
So you don't believe it's a hopeless situation?
I don't believe it's hopeless at all. I think it's been discouraging for people that it's lasted so long. But I think the very fact that it has lasted so long means that it's about to end. That's a long, you know, 50 years. Is a long time for a cover-up and for an injustice to remain. And I think the change is coming, and we have to all work toward it.
Okay, so from your background and experience, how do you predict the situation in Palestine, Israel? How will it conclude in the next few years?
Well, I'm sort of foreseeing both some very bad news and then in the long run some good news. The bad news is right now I, as other people, am very concerned that Sharon's strategy is to escalate the violence, to continue to assassinate Palestinians and bulldoze and create terror in the Palestinian territories, but then received a tragic response from a suicide bomber, and then he uses that as justification for increasing and escalating the Israeli violence. And I'm very afraid that his strategy is laying the ground for another type of invasion, such as the invasion in Lebanon in 1982, and, you know, his previous history of going into Syria and Egypt. So I'm afraid that that's what he's laying the groundwork for, and that's why we need to all go out and try to tell Americans that this is what's going on, and we need to try to prevent this war before it occurs. It could even be a regional conflict like the Gulf War that could draw in American soldiers and draw America in much more directly. We need to be telling Americans that this may be coming, and again, let's try to prevent this bloodshed this time. Let's try to prevent this war from occurring instead of just waiting for it to happen. I'm afraid that's coming. At the same time, I think the fact that the information is starting to get out to Americans in general, and that so many Americans go for their information to the internet now, means that the information that has been kept from them will start reaching them. And so over the next few years, more and more Americans will get that information. And once they know what's going on there, they will not support it. So over years, that will change. It's hard to know. I think within 5 years or 10 years, that change will occur. But I would like it to occur much faster than that.
Okay, here's a question regarding your experience in Palestine that, you know, I should have asked before when you were describing it. But I'm just curious as to whether you experienced any animosity or hostility from Palestinians when they found out you were an American journalist.
You know, the surprising thing is I didn't meet with Palestinian hostility. They're very aware of the American government's rule and what's happening to them and the American taxpayers' money. They know that it's over $3 billion each year that's going to Israel. So they're very aware of that, and they're very angry about that. But I didn't receive hostility about it personally. And very often they were able to make the distinction between what the American government was doing and the American people. So they weren't anti-American the way that we are made to think that they are. They're anti the American government, as we would be. If the government were bombing us and killing us, we would be against that government. But surprisingly, very often, they would say to me, we know that's not the American people. I think partly because, again, Americans don't know this, but many Palestinians there in the West Bank and in Gaza have relatives that are living in this country. You know, people would say, oh, my uncle lives in Chicago or Los Angeles or New York or someplace. So they don't have a hatred of Americans at all. It's more that they're very sad, and they don't understand why Americans would let this go on. And that's why I found myself over and over saying it's because we don't know about it. Americans don't know about this. If Americans knew, we would change it. And in fact, I'm now starting an organization called If Americans Knew. And the goal of this organization is to do what I'm doing, which is to get the information out to the American public that they don't have and that they need to have. And anyone that can contribute or help form this organization would be very welcome.
Oh, that's excellent. That's a great idea, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, that's very much needed, and hopefully you'll get the support that you need.
I hope so. I think that this is the way we can make the change. I think that by getting Americans the information, this is where the change will come from. I don't think there's going to be a military solution. You know, that's been tried for the last half century. It doesn't go away. All that happens is more people die, more innocent people die. I think that this is a campaign for the American people. And it's a campaign that the Palestinians have lost. The true and accurate information about them has not gotten through. And I think now we need to make the effort to ensure that information get out to the American people, And once that happens, the situation will change.
Yes, I don't believe it's, I mean, my own personal opinion, now this won't probably go on the radio, but I don't believe that if the American people did actually know what was going on, that they'd turn a blind ear, a blind...
Yeah, I think they, you know, when you look at the newspapers, you know, sometimes it makes me angry that Americans are letting this go on, but then I have to remember, I was part of the problem before, and, you know, in a way, it's not our fault. We should read our newspapers and watch our news reports and be informed, and we're not being informed. So I really, to a large degree, blame the media about this, not the American people.
Do you have any final words, maybe a word of advice for our listeners?
Well, I think the advice is to be active and not be discouraged. And I think there are some excellent books on this topic. Paul Finley has written some, and I can't, you know, I think the important thing is to become informed ourselves, and then we have to tell our neighbors. We have to tell our friends. We have to tell our schools. We have to tell our local newspapers. I think that's the thing that we all have to work on, and including your listeners.
Thank you very much for your time. That was an excellent, some excellent remarks that hopefully our listeners will appreciate and make good use of. I think I hear your cat in the background.
Yeah, sorry.
Kind of hungry.
Well, she just...
Allison Weir is from Middle College and the University of Michigan and is a mother of three. She worked as a freelance journalist and photographer for years, reporting for the San Francisco Examiner, San Jose Mercury News, and was the education writer for the Pacific Sun, and also worked for the Center of Investigative Reporting in San Francisco. She considers herself mainstream American, born and raised in the States with no direct connection to the Middle East. Her interest in Palestinian affairs sparked as she grew increasingly aware of the Americans' biased, one-sided reporting of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. The journalist in her searched to find balance in American news reporting, and since then she has become an outspoken supporter for Palestine. This is Hiba Ghalib, signing off for RadioIslam.com.
Samidun.